All right, good morning. Today's daf in Rosh Hashanah Chav Tes. We're here in the third parak, and we're finishing the third parak this morning. We're going to be starting the fourth. We are discussing a really fundamental topic that happens to occur here in Rosh Hashanah, but really has broad application throughout all of Shas, and that is whether or not mitzvahs require kavana. So again, I'm just going to reiterate what I said yesterday. Ideally, the Torah wants us to have kavana when we do mitzvahs. The Torah wants us to engage in a mitzvah and do a mitzvah mindfully, thoughtfully. So being conscientious of that which we're doing, that's the ideal. And so good. But at the same time, however, as human beings, so sometimes we go into autopilot. And when I say sometimes, I probably mean more than sometimes. But okay, that's more of the drashas that and the musar that we need to hear. But okay, we tend to go into autopilot. And as such, so if I do a mitzvah and I do it without any thought whatsoever, so am I fulfilling the mitzvah? So that's our discussion, and the Gemara's position over here, as far as the daf is concerned, is that mitzvahs ain't shichus kavana, that mitzvahs do not require kavana. That is the position that we espoused yesterday. I'm not saying that's the halacha. I'm just simply, all we're doing is just saying over a daf, which means that it is the building blocks for the halacha, but it doesn't mean that that's the halacha, just to make that point really clear. But nevertheless, the position of the Gemara has been, since yesterday's daf, since Chav Chesem and Aleph, is that there is no requirement of kavana by a mitzvah. There is no absolute requirement of kavana. So the Gemara said yesterday that it's not that you're force-fed matzah on Pesach and you had no intention to eat it, but in other words, but you were force-fed it, so you fulfilled your obligation. Atokei l'shir, you're blowing shofar from Rosh Hashanah. Not because of a mitzvah, but simply because you enjoy the sound of the shofar. Okay, I don't know who that person is. It doesn't matter. He enjoys the sound of the shofar. It's pleasant to him. He's tokei l'shir. So he happens to be making music right now with his shofar. So, and it's Rosh Hashanah, did he fulfill his obligation? So the argument, the Gemara is arguing, yeah, you fulfilled your obligation. So this is all as per the Shita of Rava. Now, here's the issues in terms of whether we're talking about Rava or Rabba, but again, for our purposes right now, so we are right now in the argument, in the current argument, that the mitzvahs do not require kavana. Now, on one hand, that's great, meaning, when I say it's great, I know I made this point, and I'm already repeating myself, but the ideal is to have kavana. That's the ideal. But on one hand, it's great in the sense that you get credit for having done a mitzvah, even though you don't have kavana. On the other hand, and this was a big part of the Gemara's discussion yesterday, on the other hand, it can actually hurt us. How so? On the front of Baal Tosef, meaning that when I'm doing something which I'm not really intent on doing anything, but it happens to be that I'm adding to the mitzvah. So if once we say that mitzvahs do not require kavana, so that means then that any action that I does already is going to have default kavana. Right? Rashi said it really clearly in yesterday's daf, that once I'm taking the position of mitzvahs ain't shichus kavana, so that means any action is as if it's tantamount to actually having kavana. So what does that mean? It means that if I decide that, let's say, on the eighth day of Sukkot, what we call Shmini Atzeres, I decide to sit in the Sukkot, sleep in the Sukkot, so now you should be in violation of Baal Tosef, the violation of Baal Tosef. So that is it's an issur in the Torah. You should get Malkus. That's what the Gemara is suggesting. Okay, so that's if I hold mitzvahs ain't shichus kavana. You could, of course, say that look, I'm not intent on adding to the mitzvahs in the Torah. I just happen to be. I enjoy the sukkah on the eighth day, so I'm gonna be there in the sukkah on the eighth day, not because I want to fulfill the mitzvah, just simply because I enjoy it. So if I hold that mitzvah shichus kavana, so then you'd be great. Then you'd be fine. So then, if you're in the sukkah on the eighth day, just simply because you enjoy it over there, that's fine. But once you subscribe to Mitzvah Sein Shichus Kavana, which is the position the Gemara took yesterday, so being in the sukkah on the eighth day seemingly should result in a problem. That was the Gemara's presentation yesterday. But the Gemara said the counter argument to that yesterday is that sukkah on the eighth day, that's chutzah zmano, that's outside of a time frame. Meaning the only time there's any kind of eligibility to violate the Isser Baal Tigra, or for that matter, Baal Tosef, is only if you're besocha zman, only if you're within a time frame, within a proper time frame. Once you're after that time frame, even if I hold mitzvah Sein Shichus Kavana, one is not going to be in violation of Baal Tosef or Baal Tigra. That is in a sentence, couple sentences, all a summary of yesterday's daf. With all that stated, Rava Amar, we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. So Chav Chesam and Beis, three lines from the bottom. So Rav Amar, lots it's lo by Kavana. So Rav is of the position that, look, to fulfill an obligation of the Torah does not require Kavana. Again, ideally you want Kavana, but if you don't have Kavana, so then b'di'evit it's going to be fine. And you're going to get a check in terms of having done the mitzvah. la'avor by kavana, but to violate the isra of Baal Tosif or Baal Tigra, so for that you need kavana. So what Rav is trying to do is he's trying to have it both ways. What he's trying to say now is that to fulfill a mitzvah, you don't require kavana. To violate the isra of Baal Tosif, for that you do need kavana. Okay, so he's trying to have it both ways, and the Gemara is not having it. So the Gemara says, "V'hamatan damim leRabbi Yoshua de la'avar v'lo bay kavana." So the Gemara says, "Okay, go back to what we learned yesterday." So remember, I'm not going to go over all the details right now. In other words, go back to yesterday's daf for a complete treatment of this topic. But we had the bloods of a matan echa getting mixed up with matan dalid. Again, if you're not following me right now, please go back to yesterday and go over the Mishnah again. So anyway, but you have a tarovis, you have a mixture of the bloods, and the halacha is what? Well, not the halacha, but the machlokas in the Mishnah is what do I do? Do I sprinkle one time? Do I sprinkle four times? And it's a major machlokas between the Tanaim, between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Anyway, over there, there is no intention to violate the Isra of Baal Tosif and Baal Tigra, and both Tanaim were clearly of the position that you're going to be in violation of Baal Tigra and Baal Tosif. So from that Mishnah, it is exceedingly clear that the violation of Baal Tosif and Baal Tigra even comes without Kavana. So the Gemara says, okay. So Ella Amar Rava. So the Gemara says, okay. So Rava says, fine, you're right. I can't have it both ways. So we'll take a more consistent approach. So lots is low by Kavana. Okay, so to violate, sorry, let's do that again. Let's do it correctly. To fulfill a mitzvah of the Torah, so it does not require kavana. La'avor bizmano lo bai kavana. And the same thing in terms of violating the Isra of Baal Tigra Baal Tosif. Meaning that if I'm adding to a mitzvah, even though I don't have intention that I'm adding to the mitzvah, so you're violating. As long as you are besoch hazman, as long as you're within in a time frame. And shalo bizmano, however, once you're chutz hazmano, what's chutz hazmano? Like the example of sleeping in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. So that's chutz hazman. So there, by kavana. So there you do in fact require kavana. Meaning, if in fact you would like to be in violation of Baal Tosif or Baal Tigra, in that case Baal Tosif. And of course it goes without saying, you don't want to be in violation of Baal Tosif. But if you are attempting to violate Baal Tosif, so there you need kavana. Why? Because you're chutz l'zmano. And so since you're chutz l'zmano, so therefore the only way you're going to be violating Baal Tosif is only if I'm intent. I'm bent on the idea that I would like to add a mitzvah to the Torah. Meaning the Torah tells me to sit in the sukkah for 7 days. I elect to go sit in the sukkah for an eighth day. And I'm telling you, I'm doing so because I want to be there for an additional day. So for that, you need kavana. If on the other hand, you're just simply lounging in the sukkah on the eighth day, simply because you enjoyed outside. So for that, you're not going to be in violation of Baal Tosif. Okay. Adkan. We could have done that yesterday. Maybe we should have, but that brings us to the Gemara's conclusion in terms of whether or not mitzvahs require kavana. As for the conclusion of the daf, meaning again the daf. Now we're not talking at the halacha, but as far as the conclusion of the daf is concerned, so mitzvahs lo tzrichos ein tzrichos kavana. There's no kavana requirement to do a mitzvah. Again, ideally you should, but if you don't, you still fulfill the mitzvah. And then a lengthy discussion, all culminating in those last lines, in terms of if that's true. So then, when I'm adding to a mitzvah unintentionally, am I violating the Isra Baal Tosif? So the Gemara's conclusion, Rava's conclusion, is that if you're besoch hazman, yes, you violate Baal Tosif. If you're chutz hazman, so then you did not violate Baal Tosif if you're doing so without kavana. Good. Amalei Rebbe Zera Lashame. Continuing now in the Gemara, as we turn to the top of today's Amud. So Ichavein Vitakali. So Rabbi Zera says to his attendant, over here, obviously another Jew, just happens to be serving Rabbi Zera, and he says, here's the story. So you're going to be blowing shofar for me. Good. All right. So far, so good. You're going to have me in mind, meaning that I'm going to fulfill my obligation by listening to you. So I'm going to have kavana to fulfill my obligation. You're going to have me in mind when you blow the shofar. Okay. I'm a kasavar, mashmiya by kavana. Okay, so now what Rebbe Zera is saying is that the mashmiya, the one producing the sound, so he requires kavana. So one could have made the argument, you're right, as the Gemara is about to try to do, that the kavana is required for the person hearing the shofar, not necessarily the one for blowing the shofar. So what Rebbe Zera is now teaching us is that no, that kavana is really required on both fronts, both on the mashmiya and on the shomea. So amakas over mashmiya by kavana meisvei. So, okay, so certainly that is what Rebbe Zera is saying, that both the one hearing the shofar, the shomea, and the mashmea, they both need require kavana. The Gemara says, okay, but on that I'm going to challenge you based on the following. Haya over achare beis haknesses, so shaya beis hasamach le beis haknesses, v'shama kol shofar kol megilim, kivin le b'yatzavim, lav lo yatza. So you're walking behind a shul. This is already this Mishnah we've cited already numerous times, and we get to cite it again. And that is, you're walking behind the shul, and they're blowing shofar in Rosh Hashanah. So clearly, whoever's blowing the shofar didn't know you were there. In other words, you happen to have been walking behind the shul. But what a fantastic opportunity. Okay, good. It's Rosh Hashanah. I need to hear a shofar. Okay, I didn't buy a seat in shul. Whatever the details are, whatever the circumstances are. But you heard shofar. So the Mishnah says, if you're mechavein, meaning you now, the focus is on you, the shomea, the one hearing. So as long as you have kavanah that you're going to hear shofar, so then that's great. And yesterday we quoted this Mishnah on a referendum of whether or not the person needs kavanah or does not need kavanah. But that's not today's discussion. Today's discussion is a referendum on the mashmia, the one blowing the shofar. In that Rebbe Zera says that to be the Baal Tokeya, you have to have everybody in mind. And you have to know who's part of your audience, of your listening audience. And over here, in this Mishnah, clearly, the Baal Tokeya does not know the person walking behind the shul is part and parcel of his listening audience. And the Gemara makes exactly this point. V'chi kim labo mai havi hayach lo kamechavin adaita didei. So even though the Shomea has in mind, but the Mashmia doesn't have this person in mind. The Mashmia doesn't even know that the person's there. So So the Gemara gives an answer. The Gemara says, nah, that's different. We're not talking stam about one person blowing for another person. We're talking about the Shliach Tzibur. As the Shliach Tzibur, so who does he have in mind? Everybody. Meaning that his kavana is that I'm going to blow for anybody and everybody. I am here for the community. And that community can include the people that I know and people that I don't know. And people that I don't even know that's listening, meaning that my broad kavana is going to include and incorporate basically everybody. So under those circumstances, even Rebbe Zera would be happy, right? Rebbe Zera happened to have been in a situation, whatever the circumstances were, where it was a one-on-one. And so therefore, he's telling the Baal Tokeya, look, you're blowing for me. You're not serving right now as a Shliach Tzibur. So you need to know that you need to have me in mind. Ah, but once you're Shliach Tzibur and you have everybody in mind, so everybody includes everybody, includes even the person walking behind the shul that the Shliach Tzibur didn't know about. Again, the word Shliach Tzibur over here just simply means Baal Tokeya, meaning, but he happens to be blowing for the community. Okay, Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, so let's do this again. So again, Rabbi Zer is of the position that the Mashmiah has to have Kavana. And now what we're trying to do is litigate whether that's correct or whether it's not correct. Meaning, do the Mishnayos and the Braises support that? So we just quoted a Mishnah. Seems like the Mishnah doesn't support Rebbe Zera. The Gemara says, yeah, but that Mishnah is different because that Baal Tokeya happens to also be doing it for everybody. Okay, so let's do this again. Round two. Tashman iskavin shomea v'lo iskavin mashmea iskavin mashmea v'lo iskavin shomea. Lo yatsa adshi iskavin shomea u'mashmea. Okay, so Braisa, which again, we've already seen this Braisa as well, and that is that when are we going to achieve the mitzvah? When you have kavana both on the part of the shomea, the one hearing the shofar, and the mashmi, the one producing the sound. You need kavanah on both parts. So far, so good. The Gemara says, now wait. Now, kitani mashmiya dumya de shomea. So over here, we're creating an equivalency. Ma shomea shomea la'atzmo, af mashmiya mashmiya la'atzmo. So, when the shomea is talking about hearing, obviously, he has himself in mind. And the mashmiya has himself in mind. Vikitani, Vikatani lo yatsa. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that you have not fulfilled your obligation until. But that means this, right? It's the reading over here gets a little bit confusing, a little bit complicated. But the point is that over here, if kavana for the shomea means kavana for yourself, the kavana for the mashmia means kavana that I'm blowing the shofar, meaning I'm simply doing the act of blowing the shofar. But I don't have to have the other person in mind. Meaning, kavana just simply means that I know what I'm doing. I'm performing the mitzvah, but not that I have somebody else in mind. So, if this is true, in other words, if that equivalency is correct, so what that does then upends the position of Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says that in order for a shofar to work from one to another, so the kavana has to be in the direction from the mashmiya to the shomea. The mashmiya has to have the shomea in mind. Good. So that's the position of Rabbi Zera, and the way we're learning the brisa right now, that's not true. Now, because we created an equivalency between the Shomea and the Mashmea. Shomea is only worried about himself. The Mashmea only needs to be worried about himself, meaning just the simple fact that he's blowing shofar. So tonight, the Gemara says, you're right. That Braisa is not going to be in accordance with Rabbi Zera. The Gemara says, okay, but it's a machlokas tanaim, the tanaim we learned in the Braisa. Shomea Shomea la'atzmo mashmea, mashmea lefi darko. So as far as the Shomea is concerned, so what is he thinking? He might be thinking about himself. As far as the mashmea, that's the Baal Tokea, so mashmea lefi darko, he just simply blows. Right, lefi darko just simply means like he normally does. So, and Amar Rav Yossi, b'emet, v'amamor b'shlech sibor. Aval b'yach lo yatsa, she's kavin shomea, u'mashmea. And Rabbi Yossi says, good, by the Shlich Sibor, so good. So he can have everybody in mind, and everybody would include, even people he don't know about. But outside of that, says Rabbi Yossi, if it's just a Shomea and a Mashmia, so the Mashmia has to have the Shomea in mind. So what comes out over here is that there is a Machlokas amongst the Tanaim, whether or not the Mashmia has to have the Shomea in mind. So, and now going back to Rabbi Zera, so we do have a defense for Rabbi Zera. Although what we just learned together, it says really it's a Machlokas Tanaim. But at least there's a Tana that supports that position. And what comes out now is that Enachinami. So Rabbi Zera takes the position of the Tana that the Mashmia has to have the Shomea in mind. Okay. A lot of talk regarding Kavana over yesterday and today. Yesterday, the question of whether Mitzvah Tzricha is Kavana. Today, in terms of creating connection between people, so does the Mashmia have to have the Shomea in mind? So a lot of discussion regarding Kavana, and quite understandably, meaning the Mishnah that we're bouncing off of, the Mishnah that we saw in, not yesterday's daf, but two dapim ago, on Chav Zayin, so it dealt with Kavana. So the Mishnah says that if you're walking behind a shul, or a house, and they're blowing shofar, or they're reading Megillah on Purim, so if you have Kavana, you're Yotze. So again, the simple reading of the Mishnah is that you do need Kavana, but as we've now spent a day and a half saying, there's another way to read the Mishnah. And you could argue that Kavana is not absolutely required. But a lot of discussion regarding Kavana. And so we are now going to be learning together the last Mishnah here in the third parak of Rosh Hashanah, all about Kavana. Right? This Mishnah, I would say, is a pretty popular Mishnah. Vayakasher Yari Moshe Yado V'Gavar Yisrael. So in Parshas Peshalach, at the end of the Parsha, so we're fighting a war with Amalek. Right? We didn't provoke, but nevertheless, we're fighting a war. And in order to gain a little bit of an advantage, so Moshe goes up onto the mountaintop and raises his arms. And he's flanked by aides in terms of helping his arms stay up. And vayakashir yir Moshe yado, and as long as his hands are raised, v'gavar Yisrael. So we are victorious. Okay. So now, v'chi. And now the Mishnah is commenting. Now this is an extraordinarily unusual Mishnah. Most of the time, the Mishnah is occupied with discussing halacha. And the Mishnah is not giving us midrashic interpretation of the Torah. Okay, but at the very same time, however, we're just coming off the heels of a discussion regarding Kavana. So this Mishnah feels that, okay, so as long as we're talking about a Kavana, so I'll insert this point over here. But still, when all said and done, it is unusual for a Mishnah to go and discuss these types of points. V'chiyad of Shemosha osos melchama shavos melchama. Or the arms of Moshe have anything to do with either the victory of war or the defeat of war. It has nothing to do with it. So Ela Lama Lachakos Masha Yisrael Mistaklon Kape Mala Umishabn Mislibam La Avihem Shebashamaim Hayum Is Garvin Vim Lav Hayunoflim. So really what Moshe was doing was raising his arms. He was pointing. In other words, basically he was saying everyone should have Kavana. If you have Kavana and realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu is really the one that's behind us, so the engine that drives us, if you will. So then fine, then we're going to do great. And if you don't realize that, then we're not going to do great. So the raising of the arms of Akash Baruch Hu is just simply pointing that we need to have Kavana. Okay, that's all that it's accomplishing. Good. Kayotze Bedavar. And the Mishnah says, and I'll give you another example of basically the same phenomena. So, Kayotze Bedavar Ataomer Aselech HaSraf V'sim Oso Al Neis. So what you'll do is you'll make a snake, and you'll put it on some sort of banner, some sort of pole. And vayakol anashuch v'ra'o so v'chai. Okay, so the Jewish people were being bitten by snakes. Okay, they were in Parshas Chukas, and there was an episode where as a result of complaining, so the Jewish people were attacked by snakes, venomous snakes. And so what the instructions were is that we're going to take a copper snake and put it on a flag and walk through the people and good. And the modern symbol of the medical community. But anyway, so v'chi nachash memis or nachash mechaye. And once again, we're going to ask the same question, right? What's going on over here? The snake is going to be causing recovery. It's going to not cause recovery. So ela b'zman sh'yisrael mistakin kapimalo mishabnim mislibon lavin shebashamayim hayu mesrapim v'im lav hayu nimokin. And so again, it's the same thing. In other words, it's just simply pointing into the direction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning, again, kaviyachol, pointing in his direction, meaning there is no direction to point to, but in other words, the way we understand, the way we speak, so you're pointing in the direction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in doing such, so one is in fact going to be having the proper kavana, and it's all a function of kavana. Okay, good. So the Mishnah gives us two examples in the Chumash and the Torah, where you see kavana becomes a major component. Cheresh, shote, v'katan, ein motzien es rabin yidei chavasam. So if you have somebody who themselves are not obligated in the mitzvah, like the classic examples of a cheresh, shote, v'katan, cheresh is a deaf mute, shote is somebody who's mentally incompetent, and a katan is a minor, who also, right, forgiveness for saying this so bluntly, but also is mentally incompetent. However, it just happens to be that the katan's got a great prognosis. So ein motzien es rabin. So they can't be motzi others. So zeh klal kol sheinu mechuyav b'davrei ein motzi esarabim yidei chavasam. And so the Mishnah over here gives us one of the biggest rules in terms of my ability to be motzi other people, and that is that if I'm not obligated, I can't be motzi others. If I am obligated, I can be motzi others. So this is what is called somebody who is a mechuyav b'davar. Yeah, okay. Let's wait till we get to the Gemara, and we'll discuss this even further. All right, Tana Rabbanan. Okay, so as you can imagine, the Gemara is just simply going to bypass the first half of the Mishnah. It was more Gadic in nature, and we're going to go straight to the Cheresh Shote V'Katan. And who's obligated in the mitzvah of shofar, and who's not obligated in the mitzvah of shofar? Okay, let's just put it out there. What we all know, but it's fair to just go over it from the front end. So who is in fact chayv in the mitzvah of shofar? So the answer is the shofar is a mitzvah essay. It's a positive commandment, shazman grama, that's going to be time-bound. Right? The mitzvah to blow shofar is on Rosh Hashanah and only on Rosh Hashanah. And yes, during the Yovel year on Yom Kippur, but in other words, but certainly it's a time-bound mitzvah. It is calendaric. As such, so we know, mitzvah essay, shazman grama, so men are obligated, women are exempt. Okay, there is an accepted minhag, an accepted minhag that women make an effort to go hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. They are not obligated in doing so. But nevertheless, there's a minhag mekubal that women go ahead and take it upon themselves to hear shofar. But there is no obligation for them to hear it. Good. So with that stated, that we all knew that, but just spelling it out. So the braisa over here is now going to go over who, in fact, is going to be obligated in hearing the shofar. Tana Rabbanan. Ha'kol chayam b'tkiyah shofar. Everyone's obligated to hear shofar. Kohanim levim v'yisraelim gerim v'avadim v'shucharim. V'entumtum v'andraganos mishachetiyav v'chetiyo ben charim. So let's go over the list of people that we said are obligated in the mitzvah of hearing shofar. So the first of the three groups that are mentioned over here, Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim. Later, the Gemara is going to ask, in just a minute, the Gemara is going to ask the question, I don't understand where in the world would we have thought that these groups are going to be excluded? And then we can also ask if these groups are excluded, so who's included? So the Gemara is going to ask that question, and that's coming up. So there we could just move on from there. Gerim, okay, converts, okay, good. But obviously over here we're talking about a ger tzedek, someone who takes on the full responsibility and obligation of all 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. So obviously now he's going to be obligated. Avadim mishucharim, you have an eved who is freed, and if we're talking about an eved kanani who was freed from his avdus for whatever reason. And yes, there is an essay not to free them, but under certain circumstances you free them. Right, classically and most famously. So there was a minyan that was required, and there was an Eved Kanani, and he was freed in order to complete the minyan, and that's a mitzvah derabim, and okay, good. Right, I feel. Right, it's one of those things where I'm sure at first it took me a little bit off guard, but you just whatever. You've been saying it enough times where you just get used to saying it. But it is strange. In other words, you have somebody who was an Eved Kanani, and then because of his emancipation, because of his cheirus, immediately becomes a Jew, meaning he can't go in the other direction. As an Eved Kanani, he's a partial Jew, right? With partial responsibility and obligation. He has to be a Shomer Shabbos. If he's a male, he needs a Bris Mila, that's just that, right. And there's more. But once he's freed, so the only direction for him to go now is up, and he becomes a full-fledged Jew. So an Eved Mishuchar is chayv in the mitzvah of shofar. Tumtum and androgynous. So tumtum and androgynous are those who have gender confusion for different reasons. Tumtum, because the genitalia is covered. In other words, there's some membrane covering the genitalia, so therefore, do not know if it's a boy or if it's a girl, so therefore they're chayev. Why are they chayev? So they're chayev because it's very possible they could be a boy. Androgynous, androgynous, somebody who features both genitalia, that of a male and a female, and so therefore they're going to be chayev. The Gemara classically, throughout Shas, has a discussion in terms of whether it's a suffix or whether it's a category in of itself. Okay, what's it called? On our trip together, I remember we did a lot of androgynous sugyas. Okay, fine. Anyway, that was over two years ago. Anyway, so the fine. So, but because certainly there's a sad zachris to the androgynous, so therefore you're chayv in shofar. And the last of the people that are somewhere in the middle is mishechetzio aviv vechetzio ben chorin. So the so somebody who's a half slave, half free person. What happened over there? So again, we paint this scenario every single time, and that is that the person was owned by two people. Okay, he was an eved Kanani, and he was purchased by a partnership. So two people, it could be more than two, but two people purchased him, and so you have now shareholders in this eved Kanani, and one of the shareholders, one of the partners, decides, you know what, I'm freeing my share. So now he's a chatzi eved and a chatzi ben chorin. Okay, and the Gemara discusses this scenario numerous times. Over here, we're going to be discussing it really briefly. All we're just simply pointing out is that he's chayv in shofar. Why is he chayv in shofar? Because 50% of him is free. And as a free person, he's chayv in the mitzvah shofar. The 50% of him that's still owned is not going to be chayv in shofar. Why not? Because we know that when it comes to an eved kanani is obligated to all the mitzvahs that a woman's obligated in. Since a woman is not obligated in the mitzvah shofar, so his eved kanani 50% status is not going to be chayv in shofar. Okay. Tumtum, ain't a mostly lowest mina veloce, ain't a mino. Okay, good. So we discussed all the people that are obligated in the shofar, and now just a couple more details in the brisa. So as far as the tumtum is concerned, so he cannot blow for another tumtum, and for obvious reason, meaning he doesn't know his status, meaning he has to hear shofar on the possibility that he's a male, but again, he doesn't know. It's covered. And so therefore, for him to blow for another tumtum, it doesn't work because he may be female and the other tumtum may be male, so it just simply doesn't work. Androgynous motzias mino avalo she'eno mino. An androgynous cannot blow for another androgynous, but an androgynous cannot blow for somebody else. So an androgynous, again, is either in the world of suffix or in the world of a beri b'fnei atzmo, its own category. But regardless, an androgynous can blow for another androgynous, but can't blow for somebody else. So, are 50-50 slave-free persons. So that such an individual can't blow for a slave and can't blow for a free person because he incorporates within himself both features. But what he can't do, however, is he can't blow for somebody else because if he blew for somebody who's totally free, well, he has a tzad avdus. And if he blew for another eved Kanani, who's not obligated, never mind. He's not obligated to hear. We don't even have to discuss. So, okay. Amar. Oh, and I'll just make one more point. The chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin cannot blow for another chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin. Tosos, not here. Okay, I forget where. But Tosos says, why not? All right. In other words, if I have a chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, so why not just simply blow for another one? Right, the androgynous can blow for another androgynous, so what's the difference? So Tosos writes that by the Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, so I call that the battery Tosos. You'll forgive me, I forgot where the Tosos is. But the battery Tosos. In other words, he's got basically a positive and a negative. And so when you're plugging the battery, right, I know this is like, you know, I don't know anyone speaks batteries anymore. But when you're plugging in the battery, so you got to make sure the positive goes into the positive and the negative goes into the negative. And Tosus writes elsewhere that when I have my Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin blowing for another Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin, so I don't know if it's going to be an alignment of the Tzad Chiyuv going to the Tzad Chiyuv and the Tzad Patur going to the Tzad Patur. In other words, the battery may get flipped. I'm saying that by way of analogy, and therefore it simply doesn't work. Okay. Good. Amar Mar. Good. So now we quoted the Braisa and a continuation. Akol Chayav Mitzkiyah Shofar Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, Pshita, Yihani lo mechayve man mechayve. So if these people aren't chayv in the mitzvah shofar, who's going to be chayv? Right, the Braisa opens up, really funny, really strange. These people are chayv in the mitzvah shofar, of course. That represents most of the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, no, kohanim mitzrichle. I could make an argument. We're going to end up dismissing the argument, but at least we could make an argument why a Kohen is in fact should be exempt from the mitzvah of shofar. Because so we know Yom Truah that Rosh Hashanah is represented by a day in which we blow the shofar. And Mandalay se ela betkia de chayuma hu de mechayva hani kohanim hol ve isnu betkia de kol hashana dechsiv vutkata mechatrosos al olosechem ema lo lechayva kamash malan. So, and you know, when it comes to the Kohen, so for him, blowing shofar is a daily event. Right, the pasuk in Parshas Baaloscha tells us that the Kohen's blowing the shofar every single day while doing the avoda. So for him, because the hearing of the trumpet blast is not a one time a year event, but rather a daily event. So maybe he's potter. So the Gemara says, what a funny argument. Me dami hasam mechatzos hacha shofar. So the Gemara says, yeah, that pasuk in Baaloscha. Could you read it again? Read it more carefully. That's talking about trumpets. We're talking about shofar. Right? Like we said a couple of days ago, the trumpets, that's man-made. The shofar, that's organic, right? That's taken off the horn of an animal. So they're not the same. So even as a havamina, the Gemara says, I don't even hear it as a havamina. So the Gemara says, Ella itzrech saka da'at chamina. So the Gemara says, fine. All right, I get it. You don't like that argument. Now let's try a different argument. So ho vitanan, sheva yovel Rosh Hashanah l'tkiyah l'brachos. So remember, Rosh Hashanah and Yovel operate with the same basic halachas in that. We're going to be blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and we're also blowing shofar on Yovel. Again, Yovel means the Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. Okay. So, and as far as the halachas of shofar are concerned, same. Meaning tkiah, trua, tkiah, doing that three times over. Okay. And with the takana of Rabbi Abba, which we haven't learned yet, but anyway, good. And the brachos, meaning in the musaf of machiz, rechona shofar. So you do that on Rosh Hashanah, and you do that on Yovel as well. Okay, wonderful. So good. So what did we just learn together? That an equivalency is created between Rosh Hashanah and Yovel. Now, that's step one. Step two. Mandi isa ben mitzvah say Yovel, isa ben mitzvah Rosh Hashanah. Good. So if I subscribe to Yovel, so then I subscribe to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, good. That's step number two. Here we go. Step number three. Vehani kohanim ho velesno ben mitzvah say Yovel. So you know that when it comes to kohanim, there are certain exemptions by a kohen as it relates to Yovel. Did not so a mission erchin kohanim v'levim, mochrin la'olam v'go'olam la'olam. That when it comes to a Kohen and a Levi, so they sell in perpetuity, they redeem in perpetuity. Okay, and over here, you could see a really long Rashi over here, and I'm going to make a really long story much shorter. There are certain aspects of redeeming land on a Yovel and a Yovel cycle that simply do not have application to Kohen and Leviim. Let's just leave it like that. I'm not going to go through all the details right now. You could see Rashi. Rashi really spends a lot of time going over the details. Really, it's just, he goes over the Gemara and Erechin. So I'm not going to go over it right now. Suffice to say, for our purposes right now, there are aspects of Yovel that do not apply to a Kohen and Levi. That's really all we need to know. So now, let's put everything together. So since there's an equivalency between Rosh Hashanah and Yovel, and since Kohanim and Leviim have certain exemptions by the rules of Yovel, so now we're going to at least attempt to make the argument, since they have exemptions by Yovel, and since Yovel's connected to Rosh Hashanah, so therefore, since they are to a certain degree removed from Yovel, they also should be to a certain degree removed from Rosh Hashanah, and therefore going to be exempt from the mitzvah of shofar. Ema b'mitzvah de Rosh Hashanah lo lechayvo. That's the havamina. So Kamash Malan, the Gemara says, okay, great. So now we put together a great havamina, and the chiddush is no. The chiddush is that despite the fact that we had a havamina, but Rosh Hashanah exists as an independent mitzvah, separate from Yovel, even though we're going to borrow all the rules of shofar for Yovel, but as far as shofar is concerned, Rosh Hashanah, so it is going to be obligated both by the Yisraelim together with the Kohanim and the Leviim. Okay. Misha chetzu eved v'chetzu ben chorin, eno motzi lois mino v'lo she'eno mino amir avhuna ula atzma motzi. Ah. Now, we discussed a chatzi av a chatzi ben chorin not being able to blow for another Jew. We also discussed not being able to blow for his own type. What about his ability to be mostly himself? Okay, so it's just him in a room, and he's blowing shofar. So, does that work? So, Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Huna, Maishna Lachem Delo Asi Tzad Avdus, Oma Pik Tzad Cheiros Atzmo. I'm sorry. Before I said Rav Nachman, so Rav Huna posits that he can blow the shofar for himself. Okay, that's Rav Huna. And now, Amalei Rav Nachman l'Rav Huna, Maishna d'lachem d'lo. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, I don't understand, right? You're obviously, you're not making any sense. Why can't he blow for somebody else? Because we don't know who's blowing. In other words, he is halachically a split persona. He is a split personality. And so now who's blowing? Okay, sorry for the poor analogy, but is it Dr. Jekyll or is it Mr. Hyde? Who's exactly blowing the shofar? So that's exactly the problem. And that's why he can't be motzi somebody else, because we don't know. So even if he's blowing for himself, so which part of him is involved in the tzkiah? And he has a tzad avdus. Can the tzad avdus, which is exempt, go ahead and be motzi the tzad cheros even in himself? And so Rav Nachman says, so I fundamentally disagree. I not only think that he can't blow for others, I don't think he can blow for himself as well. The Gemara quotes the Braisa supporting this as well. Okay, he can't blow for himself. And the Braisa supports that as well. The solution is really simple. The solution is that he'll hear a shofar from somebody who is a barhachi, someone who's a mechuyah bedaver, meaning by an adult male, period. But he can't hear from another of his like, and according to Rav Nachman, which is the Gemara's conclusion, he can't even blow for himself. Tini Ahava Berei de Rabbi Zera. The following was taught by Ahava, the son of Rabbi Zera. Right. Talk about a little bit of the history of names. Right. Ahava has turned into a woman's name. So back in the day, it clearly was used by a man. Okay, it happens. It happens in the worlds of naming, but it is certainly as a Hebrew word, it's a feminine word, meaning it's lashon nekeva. Okay, but fine, it's fine, right? Yonah is also lashon nekeva, and it's used by, you know, in the Navi, it's used for a man. Okay, nowadays it's used for women. Okay, anyway, it happens. So kol brachos, kol anafa pishiyatza motzi, chutz mi brachos alechem, brachos ayayin, shim lo yatza motzi, v'im yatza ina motzi. Okay, so now we get on to a really fundamental principle, and really, this could occupy a lot of our time. I'm going to do this really, unfortunately, too quickly, and that is that when it comes to mitzvos, so one could be motzi another person with a mitzvah, even though he himself already has fulfilled the mitzvah. So that is the kol habrachos. Even though you are yatza, alpha pishi yatza, motzi, you can fulfill others. So Rashi writes over here, why should that be? So Rashi says this is a function of arvus, kol yisrael ravim zebezeh. Everyone is responsible for one another. So not only do I have to make sure that I fulfill my mitzvos, but I also have to ensure that you fulfill your mitzvos. Part of that assurance is that if in the event that you don't know how to make a bracha, or even furthermore, even if I already fulfill my obligation, but nevertheless, you would like to fulfill your obligation and you would like somebody to make a bracha for you, so I can make a bracha for you, even though I already fulfill my obligation. And this is all a function of arvus. However, arvus only works vis-a-vis mitzvos. If, on the other hand, we're talking about just simply hana'ah, in other words, I'd like to eat an orange, you would like to eat an orange, so can I make a bracha for you if I already ate the orange, or if I'm no interest in eating the orange, no, I cannot make a bracha for you. Meaning that arvus only works for mitzvos, it doesn't work for ana. Now, I know you can make an argument that making a bracha on a food is a mitzvah, albeit it's a mitzvah midrabanan, but still it's a mitzvah. Nevertheless, categorically, we're putting this under the category of hana'a, and therefore the only way that I can make the bracha with you is only if I myself am going to be enjoying and benefiting from the hana'a as well. Vay Rava, top of the next amud. Birchas alechem shel matzah u'birchas ayin shel kiddush hayom mahu. So the Gemara says, great. Let me ask you two questions, which are basically, it's the same question, but they're basically, these two brachas exist in a bubble, or on the bubble, I should say. Notably, the birchas alechem matzah and the birchas ayin and kiddush. Good. So let's go over what we all know. So eating matzah on Pesach is a mitzvah, right? Positive mitzvah to go ahead and eat matzah. There are two brachas that are being recited. One is al achilas matzah. That's called the birchas mitzvah. I can make it for you, even though I already ate my matzah. Good, because that's a birchas mitzvah. And afa pishi yatza, motzi. But what about the birchas motzi? Right? Unfortunately, you didn't have an education. You don't know how to make the bracha. Can I make the bracha of hamotzi for you, even if I myself already ate my matzah, I already fulfilled my obligation? Okay, so the bracha of al achilas matzah, that's a birchas mitzvah. That's clear. The birchas hamotzi, so what is its status going to be? It's a Birchas Anenin. I normally can't make it for you. Yeah, but it's a Birchas Anenin in the context of a mitzvah. Oh, so maybe it's different. Similarly, the Yayin on Kiddush. So Kiddush obviously is a mitzvah. The Bracha of Kiddush is a mitzvah. You're being Mekadesh Shabbos. We also know that together with Kiddush there's Yayin, right? And Yayin becomes an integral part of the Kiddush. There's a discussion amongst the Rishonim. The simplest way to say it is that the Yayin that accompanies the Kiddush is a Din D'Rabbanan. Okay, that's the simplest way to say it. I know there are fancier ways to say it, but right now we could say it bipshuto. And now, so to say the Kiddush, the bracha on Kiddush of Mekadesh Yisrael, Mekadesh Shabbos, so that's a mitzvah. So then that's clear. I could do it for you, even though I already were Yotzei. What about the yayin that accompanies the Kiddush? So it is a Birchas Anenin. On the other hand, it's attached to Kiddush. So again, same basic discussion. And to that, the Gemara's response is, first, before they get to the response, the Gemara goes over the two sides. So, Mahu. Kev dechova hu ma'apik odilma bracha lav chovahi. So on one hand, to eat matzah and to say Kiddush is a chova, so therefore, the birchas anenin that come together with it also fall under the category of chova. On the other hand, fundamentally, the brachas themselves are a birchas anenin. So Tashma Damer Ravashi Kavina Be Rav Papi Have a Mekadesh Lan V'Chiyave Ase Arise Midabra Have a Mekadesh Lahu. So the Gemara says that here what Rav Papi did for us is he made Kiddush for us, meaning he already was Yotzei, and then when the sharecroppers came in, so he made Kiddush again, and presumably with the Bracha of Yayin. Okay, so in other words, so you can go ahead and you can repeat the Bracha Sayayin, even though the Bracha of Yayin is a Bracha Sanenin, but once attached to Kiddush. So therefore, it takes on the mitzvah component to it, and alpha pishyatza motzi. Okay, Tan Rabbanan. Lo yifros adam prusa lorachin elaim ken ochi imahem. So a person cannot break bread. Now, by breaking bread, we mean over here making a bracha, meaning the Gemara in Brachos in the seventh parak. No, in the sixth parak. Okay, sorry. In the sixth parak, talks about the proper way to make brachas on bread, but anyway. So lo yifros adam prusa lorchin elaim kein ochel imahem. So you got to eat with them. Aval parzu levanu levnei vesu kedei lechanchem b'mitzvos. However, together with your children and the people in your household, so you have to be mechanech them. So there you can make a bracha with them for them in order to be mechanech. Now, when it comes to halal megillah, which are mitzvos, so even though you already fulfilled your obligation, but somebody wants to hear halal, right? Hear halal, say halal, meaning shomei kohen, or somebody wants to do the same thing with megillah. So even though you're already yotzei, but you were already yotzei, but nevertheless, it's a mitzvah, and therefore you could be motzi for them. Hajalach Reu Beis Din. That is the end of the third parak of the Masechta, and let's get underway. We are beginning now the fourth and final parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah. And even though it's really short, right? We're finishing, I think, on Shabbos, right? Is that correct? Is that accurate? All right, whatever. Regardless, whenever we're finishing on Lamed Hay. So over here in this parak, so we're going to be talking now about the mitzvah of shofar in the context of Rosh Hashanah. Meaning, in the third parak, we just talked about the shofar, the mitzvah of shofar in of itself, right? The composite of the shofar, the make of the shofar, the disqualifications in the shofar. A little bit we spoke about kavana when blowing the shofar, but really we didn't put the shofar into the day of Rosh Hashanah in this perek. So we're going to be talking about how shofar now is fit into Rosh Hashanah. Okay, well, we all know there's a mitzvah in the Torah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That part we know. How to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, when to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So that takes on that takes all the attention of this perek. Yom Tov Shav Rosh Hashanah Shechalios B'Shabbos. Okay, so Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah that falls out on a Shabbos. So there's a mitzvah to blow shofar on Yom Tov. Presumably, if Yom Tov, and when I say Yom Tov, I mean Rosh Hashanah over here. So when Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos coincide, which is possible, it can coincide. So presumably, under those circumstances, you're still going to blow shofar on that Rosh Hashanah. Now, I'm sure we all know we don't blow shofar on that Rosh Hashanah. In other words, for reasons which we're going to articulate in today's daf, so we don't do so. But before we get to that point, at least in theory, you should be able to, meaning it's a mitzvah. And is it a violation of Yom Tov, and is it a violation of Shabbos? I wish it were an easy question. I wish it would be easy to answer. Right? The starting point is no. It's not a violation of Shabbos and Yontif because it's not a malacha. In other words, the only thing that violates Shabbos and Yontif is only when you do a malacha. And this is not a malacha. On the other hand, you're being mashmia kol, you're producing a sound. Rabbinically prohibited. So under normal circumstances, there is a rabbinic prohibition to go ahead and to make music, to make sounds, to make melodious sounds. So therefore, this might fall under a rabbinic ban, a rabbinic zera of being mashmia kol. On the other hand, right, the chachamim are going to make a rabbinic ban and therefore prevent me from fulfilling the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar. That can't be. Okay, so we're back to we blow the shofar on Yontif. But when Yontif and Shabbos coincide, so now there's a second reason to go ahead and to ban the blowing of the shofar. In that not only is it Yontif, but now it's Shabbos as well. Okay, but as much as we realize that the rabbinic ban is not going to prevent me from fulfilling the mitzvah on Yontif, meaning Yontif Rosh Hashanah, so therefore it shouldn't prevent me from doing so on Shabbos as well. Okay, so like I said, it can get a little bit confusing in terms of whether we should or we shouldn't. Okay, so the Mishnah now is going to be discussing this very issue in terms of when Yontif and Shabbos coincide, should we be blowing shofar? Yontif by itself, of course we blow shofar. It's a mitzvah to do so. What about when it's Yontif and Shabbos? So the Mishnah tells us, B'mikdash, hayutoken avolo b'medina. So they would do so in the Beis HaMikdash, but not outside of the Beis HaMikdash. For reasons which we're going to articulate. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash. Now, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hitkin Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai, Shiyu Tokim B'chol Makim Shiyesh Bo Beis Din. So Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai is one of his takanas. In this perek, we're going to go over the numerous takanas of Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai, 9 in total. I hope I got the number right. So and one of them is that we're going to be blowing shofar even in a world without a Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai, most of his takanas. I'll go even further. All of his takanas was a response to the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and so therefore, one of the takanas that's mentioned over here is that as long as you're within a community of where there's a Beis Din, now I say a Beis Din, I really mean the Beis Din. So then you're going to blow shofar. So Amar Rabbi Elazar lo itkin Rav Yochim and Zakkai ela biyavne bavad. So a debate regarding the takana of Rav Yochim and Zakkai. So the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rabbi Elazar. No, his allowance to blow shofar was only in Yavne. And Amru lo, they say to him, they say to Rabbi Elazar, you got it wrong. So Echa Yavne v'Echa Kol Makom Sheish Bo Beis Din. No, you got it wrong. In other words, it doesn't matter where there's a Sanhedrin. Anywhere where there's a Sanhedrin, so you have the ability to blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah. V'od zos I say Yerushalayim Yisrael al Yavne. Now, in this regard, Yerushalayim was greater than that of Yavne, meaning that there are allowances to blow shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the opening of our Mishnah. There are allowances to blow shofar in Yavne after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, when Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah coincide. However, the allowance of Yerushalayim is a greater allowance. The Gemara goes on to explain. Shekol Yerushalayim Rova Vishamazu Krova Vichol Lavo Token. Because not only is Yerushalayim allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shabbos, but even the environs that are proximate to Yerushalayim. So they can blow shofar as well. Uve Yavne, lo hayu token ela be'Beis Din Bavad. But when it comes to Yavne, so you have to be within Beis Din. Now, within Beis Din, meaning what? Beis Din, you have to see Beis Din. You have to actually be in the same room as Beis Din. The Gemara, I don't think the Gemara is going to discuss it. But clearly, however, not as big a heter as that of Yerushalayim. The Gemara is going to discuss this point later on. But Minah Hanimila, we jump right to the Gemara and we start off with a really basic question. And that is that when Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah coincide, we're not going to be blowing shofar on Shabbos. And only in Yerushalayim or only in Yavne, only when there's a Sanhedrin. Meaning, what's going on over here? How come we wouldn't be blowing shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah? So, Minah Nimili, Amar Rabbi Levi Bar Lachma, Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina, Kasav Echad Amar Shabbason Zichron Shua, V'Kasav Echad Amar Yom Shua Yalachem. The Torah, in describing Rosh Hashanah, describes it in one of two ways, either as a Yom Shua, that's in Parshas Pinchas, or a Shabbason Zichron Shua, that's in Parshas Emor. So and I pointed out, by the way, I can't, you're right, I have not gotten bored of this point. the Torah does not use the word shofar in conjunction to Rosh Hashanah, a point which we're gonna reinforce in this parak. But meanwhile, however, Rosh Hashanah is described either as a Yom Teruah or a Zichron Teruah. So which one is it? Yom Teruah means we're blowing shofar. Zichron Teruah, we're going to talk about how we're going to blow shofar. But we're not actually going to blow shofar. And Rashi over here says we're going to say the pasuk about blowing shofar, but we're not actually blowing shofar. So which one is it? Lokasha kam b'yom tov, shechalios b'shabbos kam b'yom tov, shechalios b'chol. So it depends. When Rosh Hashanah falls out during the week, so it's a Yom Teruah. When it falls out on Shabbos, it's a Zichron Teruah. Now, what the Gemara at this point is thinking is that this distinction that we just made is a distinction that operates min ha-Torah. That there is an actual drasha, bona fide drasha, that tells me that when Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah coincide, so then it's no longer a Yom Teruah, it's a Zichron Teruah. The obvious question, which the Gemara now asks, what? Okay, good. I'm sure we're all thinking it. And that is, if it's a real bona fide drasha, so then you don't blow the shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, period. With no exception, no exclusion. And why would the Mishnah teach us, as its first point over here, that you know, in the base of Mikdash, on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, you blow shofar. What? If a drasha would tell us that you don't blow shofar. V'od ha'lav malachihi. And on top of that, also on another fundamental position, blowing shofar, is that a malacha? Now, I already gave away the answer. The answer is no, it's not a malacha. So, it's rechkara lemeute. And meanwhile, I need a drasha to tell me you can't blow it. If it were a bona fide malacha, so then I understand the need for a drasha. But it's not a bona fide malacha, so therefore there's no need for a drasha. Detana be shmoa, kol malachas avodu lo sasu. So, yatsa tkeh shofar, diyas abashi, chachma vena malacha. Certain activities which are rabbinically banned, but not because they're a malacha, they're called the chachma. Right? They require a certain skill. But it's not a malacha. Two examples of that is the blowing of the shofar. It requires a certain skill. Ridiyas apat, removing the bread from the oven wall. Okay, and those are skilled activities, but it does not constitute, neither of those activities constitute a malacha. Okay, but still, because they're so skilled, so therefore they are rabbinically banned. Again, I say they're rabbinically banned. We all know that for the mitzvah of shofar, so obviously the chachamim are going to waive the ban. But generally speaking, though, if it's not the mitzvah of shofar, meaning stam on a Shabbos, can you blow shofar or can you blow any instrument? The answer is no. So, ela amarava. So the Gemara says, okay, so we need a totally new approach. The Gemara is now going to give us a totally new approach. So, ela amarava, mid araisa mishrei sharei, that min haTorah, it's permitted to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, even if the Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbos. And the Chachamim made Gzera Kidderaba, as per the Gzera of Rabba, Dama Rabba, Akol Chayavim, Bit Kia Shofar, Veina Kol Bikim Bit Kia Shofar. Look, everyone's obligated in blowing shofar. When we say blowing shofar, presumably we mean either blowing or hearing it. But in other words, but everyone has to participate in shofar, and not everybody knows how to do it. And so Gzera Shema Yilana Biyadova Yelech Etzabaka Loma Viyavirana Dalamas Pershus Rabim. And so what may end up happening is that on the Rosh Hashanah that coincides with Shabbos, so you may end up violating the malacha of carrying hotza'ah, where you may end up picking it up and going and walking Dal Amos. Okay, now this to us comes as no surprise because we knew this already, meaning we just got off the heels of Masechta Sukkah, so we already saw this back in Sukkah, so good. So now we're going to see it again in Rosh Hashanah. Makes sense, because this Gzera also bans the mitzvah of Dal Aminim when on the Shabbos that occurs during Sukkot, even if it's the first day, which means it's a mitzvah in the Torah, but still the Chachamim decreed not to take Dal Aminim for this concern of Shema Yavirena Dal Amos Breshus Rabim, and the same thing is true with Shofar. We are right now learning Masechta Rosh Hashanah, so we're focusing on Shofar. V'hainu time of the Lulav, v'hainu time of the Megillah, and that's the reason behind Lulav, and that's the reason behind Megillah as well. Right, funny, with our fixed calendar nowadays, so Purim never coincides with Shabbos. So what I just said is mostly true, but it's not totally true, because Shushan Purim does in fact come out on Shabbos. Okay, so for them, so they do have the Gzera de Rabba as it relates to Shushan Purim. But for us who observe Purim on the 14th day, so with our fixed calendar, it's never going to happen. We're never going to have Purim come out on Shabbos. But anyway, the Chachamim went ahead and were ochre. Mitzvahs de Rabbanan like Megillah, and even mitzvahs de Araisa like Shofar and like Dal Aminim on the first day of Sukkot. We all know the question and answer, but let's state it for the record. The Chachamim have that kind of power where they can uproot a mitzvah min haTorah? Yes, they do. Right? Yesh koch b'yad Chachamim la'akor dvar Torah. Okay, my quote over here is Baal Peh, so it might not be perfect, but the Chachamim have the power to la'akor davar min haTorah b'sheva al ta'aseh. In doing so in a passive way, by telling us not to do something, so they have that kind of legislative power where they could be oker davar min haTorah. They're looking to preserve over here the sanctity of Shabbos, making sure that we don't violate the malacha of Hotza'ah. So therefore, they have that kind of power. That's number one. And the second thing to go over, just as basics, which Tosos every time, except here. I don't know why here. No, here as well. I take it back. Every time he asks, we're talking about the concern that you're going to carry it from one place to another. So we talk about being mavir dal amos, carrying it for amos in the Rishus Rabbim. Why not go from a Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabbim? Why isn't that calculated as part of the concern as well? Here as well. Okay, I take it back. So when the Gemara comes up, Tosos asks a question, Tosos gives answers. Okay, I'm not going to go through Tosos' answers right now. I'm looking at the time. We hit our limit. I hit my limit. So we'll pause over here and a quick recap of the daf today. Okay, we finished off our discussion of Kavana, a really fundamental discussion of Kavana. Such a fundamental daf today, a fundamental discussion of Kavana, whether mitzvah srichos Kavana and srichos Kavana. Our daf's conclusion is that mitzvahs ain't srichos Kavana, that there is no requirement of Kavana when it comes to a mitzvah. And what about violating the Isra Baal Tosif? Does that also not need a kavana in order to violate? So it depends. If it's bismano, so then then you're violating Baal Tosif even without kavana. If it's chos mizmano, so then you are not violating Baal Tosif. But if you do have kavana, then you are violating Baal Tosif. Okay, that was the Gemara's conclusion. That was a really short conclusion to a really long discussion. One more aspect of Kavanah that was discussed in the beginning of today's daf is the relationship between the Mashmi and the Shomea, right? Rabbi Zera, who was hearing shofar from somebody else, said, make sure you have me in mind. And is that necessary as part of the Kavanah requirement in order to create connection between the two? So do you have to have that particular person in mind? So the Gemara says that when it comes to Shliach Tzibur, no, Shliach Tzibur has everybody in mind. So, but when it's a one-on-one tkia, so do you need it? So the Gemara ends up by saying it's a machlokas amongst the Tanaim. As long as we talked about Kavana, so the Mishnah brought in two occurrences in Chumash where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to have Kavana. The Mechama against Amalek and the incident in the Midbar with being bitten by the poisonous snakes. So there HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to have Kavana. Then the Mishnah went on to describe that somebody who himself is not obligated cannot be motzi other people. The Braisa expanded on this. The Braisa gave us a list of all the people who are chayv in the mitzvah of shofar, and therefore, if you're not in that list, you can't blow for somebody else because you yourself are not a mechuyav b'davar. Even people in the list, but some of the people on the list cannot blow for other people for various reasons of sfeikos. And finally, not yet. A kohen is including the people listing the people who are chayv in the midst of shofar. Why would I have thought otherwise? The Gemara constructed a hava mina. Why would I have thought otherwise? Obviously, the maskanas are obligated in the mitzvah. Yatza motzi, alpha pish yatza motzi. Another really big topic coming up in today's daf is that when it comes to mitzvos, even though I already fulfill my obligation, I can facilitate and make the bracha on behalf of other people as well. And Rashi says this is a function of kol yisrael raven zebezeh. When it comes to birchas hananin, the only way I can make a bracha for somebody else is only when I myself am also going to participate in the hanah. And then the questions that Gemara asks is, what about the birchas hananin for matzah? What about the birchas hananin for kiddush? Do they have the identity of hanah, or do they have more the identity of mitzvah? Gemara here concluded it has more the identity of mitzvah. And therefore, you can make it for other people, even though you already were motzi. And then finally, we started the fourth parak of the Masechta today on in the Beis Hamikdash. When Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos coincide, you blow shofar. Rav Yochanan Zakkai was Masechin after Churban Beis Hamikdash, so you are going to be blowing shofar in Beis Din. Two versions of the Takana Rav Yochanan Zakkai. Version number one is that this was only limited to Yavne, and version number two, the Amru Lo, say no, it would be applicable anywhere where there is a Sanhedrin, where a Beis Din, wherever they may be. More on that in tomorrow's daf. And finally, the last thing that we discussed is that how do I know that, generally speaking, we're not going to be blowing shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, meaning only in the Beis HaMikdash, only in Yavne, right, or whatever version that you have of Yochum and Zakkai. Why is the default that you're not blowing shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah? At first, the Gemara thought it was a drasha. Then the Gemara realized it's not a drasha, but rather it's a gzeirah de Rabbanan in order to preserve the sanctity of Shabbos.